Welcome to this series on no-fault negotiating. The principles and skills of no-fault negotiating will give you the insight and the skills that you need to get the results you want with others in all areas of your life. You will find that the principles will help you analyze and solve any kind of problem, to address and resolve conflicts, to confront others and to draw boundaries, to parent more effectively, to negotiate the terms in contracts, to do consultative selling, and to motivate others to want to cooperate with you. Len Laritz has long been respected as an innovative and effective writer, trainer, and negotiator. His model of negotiating has been developed out of 25 years of practical experience, working with thousands of individuals in every walk of life, and hundreds of organizations in business, healthcare, government, and education. He has developed collaborative management teams, successfully built union management relationships, created highly effective sales teams, and significantly enhanced the productivity and quality in many organizations. His video-based training program, Real Time Commitment, is used in major corporations throughout North America. In this first part, Len will outline what he will be covering in this tape series. He then goes on to explain the difference between trying to be right versus trying to understand, and how this impacts the results we get with others. He will also examine the term no fault and how our scarcity and abundance beliefs predetermine the kind of results we get. Handout number one outlines Len's main points.
Hello, I'm Len Laritz. Let me begin by giving you some overview of what I'm going to be covering in this series and why the material is organized the way it is. Basically, there are four major components to the content of this negotiating series. Tapes 1 and 2 will cover basic concepts about negotiating and give us a common framework for thinking about all the rest of the material. The second major component will be talking about levels of thinking, and these will be covered in tapes 3, 5, 7, 8, and 10. Levels of thinking grows out of the work that I've done over the last 25 years in identifying different levels of thinking competency and therefore relating ability that we have as human beings. What's important about these levels of thinking is that they affect everything we do and certainly affect how we approach our problem solving and negotiating and motivating and trying to reach agreement with others. I think that these tapes will give you some real insight about yourself and about why you do what you do. They'll give you some insight about what works and doesn't work for you, and they'll give you some insight about the behavior of others and what you can do to get others to want to cooperate with you. The third major component of material is four principles, and these are covered in tapes 4, 6, 9, and 11. These principles are principles that apply to any negotiation that you do. They have universal application, and basically are principles that enable you to function out of your best thinking ability to create the most options for yourself with others. And they're principles that will, in various ways, give you models that will help you to not get stuck in your negotiations with others and will show you how to always move on. They're principles that will help you be effective in trying to get what you want with others. And the fourth component that we'll be covering in this series is what I call my no-fault formula. It's a simple five-step process that you can use for any kind of negotiations, verbally, in written form. You can use it as a diagnostic or an analytical tool. It'll give you a map to follow, to know what to do, and a map for listening to others. And it will help you know when it's not working with others, what you need to go back and do, what you missed. So basically we have those four components: basic concepts, levels of thinking, four principles, and then a process, the no-fault formula. The material is interwoven. So the first two tapes will cover basic concepts, but then in the tapes following, in tapes 3 through 11, I will alternately be covering levels of thinking and then the various principles. The reason for this is that while these principles apply to any type of negotiation, particular principles particularly apply to when we're dealing with people in certain levels of thinking. For example, if I'm dealing with someone who is in the first level of thinking, enforcer thinking, which is the thinking that's typical of preschool age children or of adults who are highly threatened, stressed, or tired, then what becomes most important in that context is to find ways to help people feel safer. Hence, the first principle has to do with helping create safe environments with others. Now, this principle applies to any negotiation, but it particularly applies the more threatened, obviously, or defensive someone is. And that's true of the other principles. You will find that they particularly apply to the level of thinking that we addressed just before that principle. A question that I would have you reflect on as we begin this series is what you would like out of it. What do you want as a result or as an outcome or as a payback for you taking the time of going through this material? What would you like to be able to do better or quicker or easier? What kind of situations do you find difficult to address or to negotiate with others today? When do you get stuck? When do you feel powerless? When do you feel intimidated? Who do you find difficult to deal with? Who have you not been successful with? Who do you avoid? Who kind of stops you in your tracks? Who do you go back and have repeated problems with? Who have you not been able to motivate or to get to collaborate with you in ways that you need for them to? What is it that you would like? What are your objectives? I believe that this series can help you do whatever it is you need to do in more effective ways. I believe it can transform and surprise you with the kind of results you can get in your relationships with others in whatever the context in your life. So I invite you to let yourself envision what you want as outcomes, because my experience is that once I can imagine the possibility of what I want, it usually happens. So spend a moment talking about the title. So why have I adopted the title No Fault? I don't know where the title actually came from. It fell out of my head one day, and it happened some years ago. But what occurs to me in my observation of myself and others is that we tend to spend a lot of time either trying to blame other people for what's frustrating in our lives, or trying to get other people to take responsibility for us in ways that they are really not responsible for us. And it goes from major things in our lives, like it's your fault that I'm this way, to what did you do with my socks this morning? But we always want to make somebody else responsible for whatever we're not getting easily in our life. What I want to do in this series is propose that it's nobody's fault. It's nobody else's fault, and it's not our fault. That what we want to focus on is rather simply trying to understand what the realities are that we need to deal with in ourselves and with others and in our world, so that we can go about doing what we need to do in the most effective ways. When we sink into blaming others or blaming ourselves, we get stuck. We don't operate effectively. We push other people away, and we stop ourselves from doing what we otherwise might do well. The issue isn't fault. The issue is understanding. And that leads to the first important concept in this series of negotiations. That is that there is a difference in us when we're trying to be right versus when we're trying to understand. I believe that it has to do with a fundamental posture of how we find ourselves in the world at any given time. We are either in a posture of trying to be right, or we are in a posture of trying to understand. When we're in a posture of trying to be right, we have a tendency of making other people wrong. We tend to create fights. We tend to push other people away, make them defensive, make it impossible or difficult for them to collaborate or cooperate with us and do what we need them to do. And when we're in a posture of trying to understand, we draw people to us. We make them feel listened to and validated and safe. We make it easy for them to do what we need them to do. We have lots of ways of trying to be right. I can try to be right by using force or intimidation or demanding Might makes right. If I can make you do it, then that makes me right. We see lots of examples of that in personal relationships between nations throughout history. Another way we try to be right is that we use logical persuasion. We try to talk other people into doing what we want them to do. We try to convince other people to do it our way. If I can convince you to do it, that makes me right. Or other times we try to be right by being more clever than other people. We try to trick them or manipulate them into doing what we want them to do. If I can beat you out in some way and you don't know it, then that makes me right. I can laugh all the way to the bank, or I can chuckle to myself that I got away with it. Other times, we try to be right by making other people feel guilty and obligated, by being self-righteous, by having God or the truth or law on our side, by taking care of other people so they feel like they owe it to us. So self-righteousness and obligation is another way that we try to be right. Other times we try to be right by being tough and independent and superior and dismissing and proving other people that we can do it ourselves and we really don't need them. Our independence and self-competence makes us right. Other times we try to be right by keeping our anger and our judgments towards others. Because as I can judge another person as being wrong, as long as I can tell myself I'm right, as long as I can hold on to my anger, that makes me right and makes you wrong. We have many ways of trying to be right. Again, the problem with all those ways of trying to be right is they make other people wrong. They get us stuck. They don't get us resolution with others, and they don't get us the results we want from others. Being right may be satisfying in the moment, but it doesn't get us what we want, either for ourselves or with others. The other option of how we can be in the world is to be in a posture of understanding. When I'm in a posture of understanding, I basically trust myself. I trust myself enough to be with what's true in the moment, in myself, with others, and in my world. I trust myself enough to know what's true. I trust myself enough to listen to the dialogue going on inside of me, to listen to what's going on in me emotionally, to listen to that source of knowledge in me. I trust myself enough to be observant of my own behaviors and accountable for what I'm able to do and what I can't do and the kind of results and impacts I have on others and the situation around me. I trust myself enough that I have space in my ears to listen to others, that I can take the time to hear what another person has to say instead of believing I don't have time to listen to them and instead I need to be planning my defense while they're talking. Planning my defense while others are talking is another way of trying to be right. But when I'm in a posture of trying to understand, I don't have to do that. I know that I have enough time to think through how I need to respond after I understand them, after I've listened to them. Being in a posture of understanding means that I'm willing to face reality. I'm willing to deal with what is. I have a willingness to understand others instead of beat them. I know the difference in my heart. I know the difference in that area of the wishbone above my stomach when I want to be right, when I want you to admit it's your fault or you're wrong. I know that feeling versus when I have the space, the patience, the time, the capacity, the generosity within me to be able to simply try to understand what's true without having to be angry, without having to force, without having to convince others, simply to understand. Now, frequently when I talk about this concept with others, their first response is, but if I just try to understand other people, that means that I agree with them, or that means I'm going to be victimized by them, or that means I'm passive. Understanding has nothing to do with agreement or passivity or being a victim. It's simply understanding. It's a willingness to know the truth in the moment and over time. It's a willingness to face reality instead of continuing to live in our fantasies about how we wish things were. It has nothing to do with being passive. It has nothing to do with being a victim. It's a willingness to deal with the truth. So let's move on to the definition that I use for no-fault negotiating. The definition is that negotiating is essentially a process. It's something we do. It's something we do with others. It's a process of trying to create mutual understanding. You're going to find as you go through the series, I'm going to continually keep circling back to the concept of understanding, because I think it is at the core, it's the essence of what makes the difference. So negotiating is a process of creating mutual understanding. Why? Well, to get others to do what we need them to do in a way that builds ongoing relationships. Now, there are three important components of that definition. The first is that it's a process of mutual understanding rather than a process of trying to be right. Second, that we do it with others. We do it in order to get others to do what we need them to do. I don't mean that in a manipulative way. I don't mean that in a disrespectful way or a way that invalidates others. But the fact is, the reason we have relationships with others is because we need things from others. If I don't need anything from another person, if I can take care of it myself, if I'm self-sufficient in something, then there's nothing to negotiate. I only negotiate when, in fact, I need someone else to help me meet my needs and achieve my objectives. So negotiation always has to do with getting others to do something. The to-do may be that they understand me, or the to-do may be that they're willing to spend time with me and listen to me. Or the to-do may be that I need them to go sell something or perform in some way in the world. But it's always something that we need others to do. The important element is that we do that in a way that builds and maintains ongoing relationships, rather than destroying relationships and pushing other people away. As I observe myself and other people go about this process of trying to create mutual understanding to get what we need from one another, what I observe is that we do it out of some basic assumptions, what I call the difference between our scarcity assumptions and our abundance assumptions. Our scarcity assumptions really grow out of our fears, and the first of them is a fear that there's not enough. There's not going to be enough of whatever I need, other people aren't going to want to provide me with enough, and there's not going to be enough other people. And what I'm really afraid of in all that is that I'm not enough. I'm not enough to do what I need to do in a sustained way over time to get the results that I need. And as soon as I'm afraid that there's not enough, then the second assumption is that other people are basically greedy. They're out to line their own pockets or take care of themselves, and that I can't trust them. And that leads to my third assumption then, that my best approach to go about getting what I need from others is one of strategizing. It's like the world's a plate of chocolate chip cookies, and there's 10 cookies and 12 kids, and I got to figure out some way to beat other people there, or I'm going to lose out. The other assumptions are what I call abundance assumptions. The first of these is an assumption that there's more than enough. It doesn't mean that I can always get what I want, when I want it, from whom I want it. That's not reality. But what's true is that I've always gotten more than enough, or I wouldn't be here today. And for all the things I don't know how to do, have made mistakes on, get intimidated by, have screwed up, I've always figured out some way to take the next step. I have always been more than enough, or I wouldn't be here today. And as I come to trust that deep in the marrow of my bones, I realize that other people, and this is the second abundance assumption, other people are not basically greedy. They're just basically needy. The world is made up of a lot of little kids running around in adult bodies doing the very best they know how to do. And when they know how to do it better, they do. That people aren't primarily out to get me. That they're primarily out trying to take care of themselves. That they get scared. And when they get scared, they revert back to those self-protective, defensive behaviors that they learned as children. And sometimes those behaviors are not constructive, and sometimes they're destructive. Sometimes people need to be contained. But that doesn't mean they're bad people. It just means that they get scared. As I come to recognize the children inside other people, whatever the body looks like and however old that body is, as I come to recognize the vulnerability in others, the children that are within them, that other people stop being scary. I stop seeing other people as objects to be judged as right or wrong or good or bad. I simply see them as people like me, who sometimes need to be contained so that I'm not victimized by them, but who, like me, when they feel safe and respected, when they feel connected, when things make sense to them, almost always cooperate, are willing to be reasonable, are willing to do what needs to be done. And as I come to know that in my experience, as I come to know, first of all, that there is enough. There's enough in the world, there are enough other people, I'm enough. And as I come to realize that other people are not basically greedy, they're just basically needy, then I realize again that my third assumption is that my best approach to go about getting what I need from others is one of understanding. Again, I come back to the issue of understanding. I need to understand what's going on in me and what I really need. I need to do my own homework. I need to understand others and who they are and what they need and why they're doing what they're doing instead of doing what I wish they were doing, why that makes sense to them. And I need to understand the reality of our situation, what real options we have and what real limitations we have to work within. And given what that reality is, what we need to do to take next steps so that we can both move on and get what we need in this situation. My experience is that these assumptions make all the difference in the kind of results we get in our interactions with others. That when I believe that there's not going to be enough, when I believe that other people aren't going to want to give me enough, when I believe that I need to strategize, then I become self-protective. I become defensive. I act in ways that create the very results that I don't want. Sometimes I don't act at all because I've talked myself out of it. I've said, I don't think this will work. I don't think I can have this. And of course, if I don't do it at all, I've proven my conclusion that I can't have it. Other times, when I assume that I can't trust other people, or I assume that they're not going to want to cooperate, then I approach them in such a defensive or confrontative or aggressive way that causes them to protect themselves from me. So again, I can prove my conclusion of, yep, I can't trust other people, I can't get what I want from them. On the other hand, when I have the capacity within myself to trust myself, to trust that I can, that I'll be able to do what I need to do when the time comes, to trust that if I am reasonable and if I try to understand other people, they are probably going to be reasonable and try to understand me. When I approach people in that manner, the reality is, over and over again in my life, that I do get the results I want from other people, that they don't have to constrict and close up and protect themselves from me, but I make it safe for them to open up, to have the capacity within themselves to listen to me and to do what I need for them to do. So we've talked about the importance of understanding instead of being right. And I've talked about the importance of being aware of our basic assumptions that I think oftentimes predetermine what happens in our interactions with others. And we've talked about the definition of negotiating being primarily a process not of beating other people, but as a process of creating mutual understanding, of making it as easy as possible for other people to do what I need for them to do, and a process of trying to understand others. In your handbook that goes with this tape series, you, in addition to the handouts that help you follow the principles that I talk about, there are also a series of application exercises that you can do to help you integrate and use these materials more effectively. So if you would turn to your handbook, worksheet number 2, that's entitled Understanding Versus Being Right, will give you an application exercise to go with these concepts. It first of all has a series of boxes, statements that you can check to identify your favorite ways of trying to be right. And then it gives you some reflection questions to use to reflect on when you tend to use those behaviors, when you tend to have those beliefs, and what are the behaviors that come out of those, in what situations you use them, and what kind of results you get or don't get from that. The value of this exercise is to help you become more reality-grounded and insightful about yourself, about your favorite ways of protecting yourself, and how those, in fact, unintentionally set you up to not get what you want from others. I invite you to take the time to do this first exercise, and we'll come back together in the next tape.
This is the end of tape 1.